Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tesham vicharatam padmyam. Tirthanam pavanechchaya. Bhitasya kim narocheta tavakanam samagamaha tirisham vitaratam padbhyam tirtanam pavanechchaya bhitasya kim narocheta Tavakanam samangamaha. Tesham vitaratam padbhyam. Tirtanam bhavanechchaya. Vitasya kem narocheta. Tesham vicharata padhyam tirudanam bhavanechaya vitasya kem narochita tavakanam samangamaha mothers Tesham vicharatam padhyam Tirtanam bhavanechchaya Bhitasya kim narocheta Tavakanam samagamaha Tesham vicharatam padmyam Tirtanam bhavanechchaya Vitasya kim narocheta Tavakanam samagamaha Tesham vicharatam padmyam Tirutonam bhavanechaya Samagamaha Tesham of them. Vicharitam who travel. Padbhyam by their feet. Tirthanam the holy places. Pavana Ichaya with a desire to purify. Bhitasya to the materialistic person who is always fearful. Kim, why, na, not, ruchita, becomes pleasing. Tavakanam, of your devotees. Samagamaha, meeting. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, dear Lord, your personal associates, devotees, wander all over the world to purify even the holy places of pilgrimage. Is not such activity pleasing to those who are actually afraid of material existence? Purport. There are two kinds of devotees. One is called Goshta Anandi, and the other, Bhajana Anandi. The word Bhajana Anandi refers to the devotee who does not move but remains in one place. Such a devotee is always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He chants the Maha Mantra as taught by many acharyas and sometimes goes out for preaching work. The Goshya Anandi is one who desires to increase the number of devotees all over the world. He travels all over the world just to purify the world and the people residing in it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, Priti Vite Ache Yata Nagaradigram Sarvatra Prachar Haibe Moranam. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted his followers to move all over the world to preach in every town and village. In the Chaitanya Sampradaya, those who strictly follow the principles of Lord Chaitanya must travel all over the world to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya, which is the same as preaching the words of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. The more the devotees preach the principles of Krishna Katha, the more people throughout the world will benefit. Devotees like the great sage Narada, who travel all over the world, he travels all over the universe. So. Devotees like the great sage Narada, who travel all over to preach, are called Goshta Anandi. Narada Muni is always wandering throughout the universe just to create different types of devotees. Narada even made a hunter devotee. He also made Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad devotees. Actually, all devotees are indebted to the great sage Narada, for he has wandered both in heaven and in hell. A devotee of the Lord is not even afraid of hell. He goes to preach the glories of the Lord everywhere, even in hell, because there is no distinction between heaven and hell for a devotee. Narayana para sarve nakutashtana bibhyati swarga pavarga narakeshu api turyarta darshinaha. A pure devotee of Narayana is never afraid of going anywhere and everywhere. For him, heaven and hell are one and the same. That's a quote from the Bhagavatam, 6th Canto. Such devotees, wandering all over the world, deliver those who are actually afraid of this material existence. Some people are already disgusted with material existence, being confused and frustrated by material enjoyment. And some people who are intelligent are interested in understanding the Supreme Lord. Both may take advantage of the pure devotees who wander throughout the world. When a pure devotee goes to a place of pilgrimage, he desires to purify that holy place of pilgrimage. Many sinful men bathe in the holy waters of the places of pilgrimage. They take their baths in the waters of the Ganges and Jamuna at places such as Prayag, Vrindavan, and Mathura. In this way, the sinful men are purified, but their sinful reactions remain at the holy places of pilgrimage. When a devotee comes to take his bath at those places of pilgrimage, the sinful reactions left by the sinful man are neutralized by the devotee. Tirti kurvanti tirtani swa anta stena gadha brita. Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 13th Chapter, verse 10. Because a devotee always carries the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, wherever he goes becomes a place of pilgrimage, a holy place for understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is therefore the duty of everyone to associate with a pure devotee and thus attain freedom from material contamination. Everyone should take advantage of the wandering devotees whose only business is to deliver conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyanat Mirandasha Yiranjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Panchakalputurubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Devacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Translation, dear Lord, your personal associates, devotees, wander all over the world to purify even the holy places of pilgrimage. Is not such activity pleasing to those who are actually afraid of material existence? Hare Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada talks about the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. The difference between a devotee means one who is anandi. He's always blissful. And a non-devotee means one who niranandi. He's always morose. So in this way, we can understand if we're devotees or not. Devotee is always anandi, he's always blissful. And a non-devotee is niranandi, he's always morose, always absorbed in sorrow and lamentation, is niranandi. So if you need a barometer to understand devotional status, this is the easy test. How blissful am I? So then there are two types of anandis, two types of devotees. One is called as a bhajana anandi, and the other one is called as a goshtiya anandi. So both of them are anandi. Sometimes in our movement, we'll say we're goshtiya anandis, and we kind of tend to, them bhajana anandis over there, they only care about themselves. But actually, both of them are anandi, so they're still better than us, right? And a bhajana anandi is a pure devotee of the Lord who's deriving pleasure by bhajan, bhajana anandi, by his bhajan of hearing and chanting, and he also preaches, is mentioned, Prabhupada mentioned, Bhajanananda, he also preaches, but he resides mainly in one spot, and his preaching is not so, profuse as the Goshtiyanandi. A Goshtiyanandi means one who has the desire to expand Krishna's happiness by increasing his devotees. Because Krishna, I read that thing the other week, Krishna is unlimited, so he wants unlimited devotees in order to enjoy. So the Goshtiyanandi is in tune with that desire of the Lord, so he wants to expand Krishna's happiness by expanding the devotees. So this is an important way of thinking of it. It's not that he wants to expand his happiness by collecting more and more followers on Goshtiyanandi. His focus is the pleasure of Krishna. Goshtiyanandi means one whose bhajan consists of fulfilling the desire of the Lord. This definition is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Goshtiyanandi means his bhajan. He's also a bhajanandi. Because without bhajan, without worship of the Lord, how you would preach? Suppose we never chanted any japa, and then I'm saying I'm going out for preaching work. It doesn't make any sense. So Goshtiyanandi is also a bhajanandi, but his bhajan consists of fulfilling the desires of the Lord, which are communicated to him through the parampara. Because directly the Lord is not speaking. The Lord communicates his desire through guru parampara. There's verses like that I quoted the other day. Jiva sakshat nahi guru. What is that? Jiva sakshat nahi guru. Tabe chaita rupe. Shiksha guru hai. Krishna mahanta sarupe. I just learned this verse last week. I quoted it the other day in class. Krishna, jiva nahi sakshat means the jiva does not directly perceive Krishna. Jiva does not directly perceive Krishna, who is Chaitarupa, who is the guru within his heart. So Krishna appears externally in the form of the mahant in order to give him shiksha and give him to communicate his desire to him. So a Goshtiyanandi means one who wants to fulfill the desire of the Lord, which is communicated to him through the guru, through the parampara, and that is his bhajan. So he would go through all types of troubles to fulfill that desire of the Lord. Preaching is his bhajan. Srila Prabhupada has quoted this thing. Just like Srila Prabhupada is Goshya Nandi. And what is his bhajan? Preaching is his bhajan. Fulfilling the desire of the Supreme Lord as communicated to him through Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Goshya Nandi is not an ordinary living entity. He's an extraordinary living entity. He can tolerate being separated from the Lord in order to satisfy the Lord's desire. That's an extraordinary living entity. Just like I was reading Ninth Canto recently. So after Lord Ramchandra came back to Ayodhya, so then what did he instruct his brothers, Bharata, Shatrughna, and the other ones, Lakshmana? Is another one? That's all of them, right? What did he instruct them? He instructed them to conquer all the directions. So Bharata had been in separation from Ramchandra for how many years? 14 years? Separated from Ramchandra for 14 years. He wasn't eating anything but leaves, and he was wearing tree bark. His hair got very nappy, matted locks. And he used to just, what is that? He'd leave the shoes of Ram on the throne, and he would just chant Hare Krishna throughout the day and night. Because he was suffering the pains of separation from Lord Ramchandra. Then after Ramchandra returns, a long time separation, it was a very blissful meeting to see Ramchandra. But then Ramchandra instructs him, along with the other brothers, to conquer the four directions. And then he fulfilled that desire of the Lord, and he went out to conquer, you know, the directions as instructed. So this is an example. They can Goshya Nandi has pure love of God, but he is able to tolerate separation from the Lord to fulfill the desire of the Lord. Therefore, he's a very special type of jiva, not an ordinary jiva. Sometimes we may say, I'm a Goshya Nandi, but Goshya Nandi is not an ordinary living entity. First of all, you have to be a Nandi. Second of all, what makes the Goshya Nandi so extraordinary is he can tolerate separation from the Lord in order to fulfill the desire of the Lord. This is an extraordinary jiva, living entity. So Krishna, as this Goshya Nandi, is traveling all over the universe to save the conditioned souls. Niranandis, this particular point mentioned here in this verse, the Niranandi, the non-devotee, he is bitasya. He's always absorbed in fear. He's always absorbed. Ishare petasya viparyo ashmitihi vayam dutiya abhinivesha. He's always absorbed in fear. Why? Because he's always seeing something separate from Krishna for his own enjoyment. Abhinivesha dutiya. He's seeing something that is separate from Krishna. And when one sees something separate from Krishna, one thinks of that something in terms of his own enjoyment. So in his attempts to try to enjoy that, his heart is always captured in fear and lamentation. He's always afraid in his material existence. So in order to go from the platform of being Niranandi to Anandi, one needs the association of an Anandi. That is a simple point. In order to go from Niranandi, most of us are Niranandis only. We're full of fear. Everything we do in this world is impelled by fear. The Anandis, everything they do is impelled by love for Krishna, the desire to satisfy Krishna. That is what is impelling their activities. Therefore, they're deriving great satisfaction and bliss. And the Niranandis, everything we do is impelled by fear. Therefore, we don't get much satisfaction and bliss. Just like, why do we chant Hare Krishna? Why do we serve as devotees? Why do we do these things? Is it because it's impelled by great affection for the devotees, great affection for the Lord, therefore I'm chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? Or is it because of fear I'm doing? If I don't do, then my anarthas may take me out. If I don't do, I may become, again, attracted to the material energy. If I don't do, there will be severe consequences from disobeying the order of Guru. In that way, we don't always experience satisfaction from our activities of devotional service because the whole platform is fear-based platform and no affection at all, no affection at all. Just because I'm afraid I am doing, how long that can go on? Just like the Christians, they would preach this thing. They would preach, if you don't do, then, see that over there? There's a lake of fire, and you'll be there for about eternity. And then on that platform, everyone was executing their devotional service, in transcendental fear. Not transcendental fear. They were executing the devotional service out of fear, their religion, and after some time, it was so debilitating, they gave up their religion also. Now no one cares for that type of idea, that religion. So how long one can do fear-based devotional service? One has to come to the platform of being impelled by affection for the love, for the devotees of the Lord. Then you get a nandi, you become an anandi. So we don't know how to do that because we're always fixed on our own sense gratification. So we only know how to do things impelled by fear. Devotional service, doing devotional service out of fear is a natural consequence of us being fixed on our own program of sense enjoyment. So therefore, we need the association of an anandi to come in the platform of ananda, happiness. So Krishna travels around the universe in the form of an anandi in order to give give the jivas the opportunity to come to that platform of happiness. So that's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. This is one of the first verses I learned from the Bhagavatam. Vyaktam atmavatam atma, Bhagavan atma bhavanaha, swana anugraha ye imam siddharupi charati ajaha. This is one of the first verses I learned. I really appreciate it when I first read through Bhagavatam. It's mentioned that Krishna is atma bhavanaha. He's very eager for the living entity to come back home, back to Godhead. Very eager. He's a well-wishing friend, and he's eagerly awaiting our association. He is more eager to have us back than we want him. That's a fact. And so why is that? Swadnam, because we are his parts and parcels. We are his children. So therefore, to show us special mercy, anugraha yemam siddharuti charati aja, to show us special mercy, he's traveling all over the world in the form of siddharupi, the devotees of the Lord. In that form, Krishna is traveling all over the universe in order to benefit his parts and parcels who are forgetful of him. Krishna mentions this point. So Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. Anuvrajamyaham nityam puyayeti renu angri renu bihi. Krishna says this also in the Bhagavatam. He says that his mercy, anuvrajamyaham nityam, means I always follow the footsteps of my devotees. Wherever they shall give mercy, then in that place you shall be able to find Krishna's mercy. This is the position of a Goshtiya Nandi. So he's not a very ordinary living entity. He's not even an extraordinary living entity. He's a super extraordinary living entity because he is fulfilling the desire of the Lord. One who is always trying to fulfill the desire of the Lord, then he is always blissful. One who has seen the Lord may not always be blissful. Right? One who has seen the Lord, because what you will see finally, seeing means service. When you see the Supreme Lord or you see a devotee, what are you seeing? Are we seeing like eye candy? They said this phrase is there in the material world, eye candy. Ooh, nice. Like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, this famous story, I think someone told this last week. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was giving class, and after the class, right before the class, again, no devotees were present, as usual. No devotees were present. Class is about to begin. Where is everyone? Where is everyone? Finally, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave class, then the devotees came after the class. So, where were you at? I didn't see you at the class. Oh, we were going here to this holy place, here to see that deity, here to see that deity. And it was very nice, Guru Maharaj, like that. What would you see? What did he say? Blackstone. You will see only Blackstone. That's pretty good. We don't see that. One devotee said when he looked at the altar, he sees the impersonal Brahman. Because there's just so many lights, you know. You know how sometimes you look at the deities and you're kind of like spacing out and everything gets kind of like blurry? So one devotee had joked, he said, when I was seeing the altar, I was seeing only the impersonal Brahman. It took some years before I actually saw, oh, actually there's a deity on the altar. Oh, the deity is there. So what we will see, we cannot see with these materialistic eyes. What is that verse? Atashri Krishnama Dinamavet Graham Indriya. Sevamuk. Only when there's Sevamuk you can actually begin to see. So seeing a devotee, seeing the Supreme Lord means service, seeing the service that I have to them. That is real seeing. Otherwise, no seeing at all. What are we seeing with our blunt material eyes? We're seeing an ordinary jiva, seeing stone, seeing ordinary book, which I'll read and figure out myself. Without Sevam Muk, the strong inclination of service, there is no seeing at all. So real seeing means service. service to guru, service to, so then to fulfill the desire of the Lord in devotional service, then in that way one is actually associating with the Supreme Lord. One, that is more important to fulfill the desire of the Lord than it is to see the Supreme Lord. Many people saw the Supreme Lord. How many could understand his position? Why does Krishna say, avajananti mam udha manushyam tanam ashritam? Why does he make this statement? He makes a statement that when I come in my human form, many fools deride me. Why did they deride me? Were they not seeing Krishna? They were seeing Krishna, but they were not seeing Krishna because they didn't have a mood of service, a service inclination towards Krishna. So who could see Krishna? Those who wanted to serve Krishna could see Krishna. When they had a strong desire to serve, then those personalities could understand the position of Krishna. So only if we are interested in service are we actually associating. Sadhu Sangha means Sadhu Seva. Without Sadhu Seva, there is no question of Sadhu Sangha. It is just a materialistic thing for satisfying our various urges, like the urge to speak and other such urges. And having a nice social gathering. This is what Sadhu Sangha is becoming, how you say, reduced to, a nice social gathering. I had a hard day during the week, and so Sunday feast is a nice social gathering. And we can all come together, speak plenty of prajapa. We hear a class also, space out during the class. We clap at the end, so we appear to appreciate it. And then we take prasadam. And this way, this is called Sadhu Sangha. There's not Sadhu Sangha. Sadhu Sangha means what service I can render. What service are we interested in rendering for that sadhu, for the Supreme Lord? And that way, we're actually associating with the Supreme Lord. So that desire of the Lord is communicated through the parampara. So Prabhupada is quoting here, we are servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what is his desire? His desire is that he wants to expand the servants of Krishna. So the famous verse is there. I know, Yare Deka Tare Kaha, Krishna Upadesh, Amara Gaya Guruhan Tare Desh. That's the verse. So when Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, he met this Kurma Brahmana. So the Kurma, naturally, the way Mahaprabhu's preaching was going on in South India, as described by Kaviraj Goswami, was that he would see many people and he would instruct them to chant the holy names of Krishna. And then he would embrace them. And when he would embrace them, he would infuse them with bhakti shakti, Srila Prabhupada says. And then they would go to their village, and whoever they would see and embrace, then they would get the bhakti shakti. And that way, thousands of people were becoming devotees. Come, give me a hug. They have one hugging, Mata is there, a spiritual leader somewhere. She goes around hugging everyone, and she's kind of a big lady. And she goes around hugging everyone, and everyone remains materialistic like anything. No shakti, no potency. But when Mahaprabhu would hug someone, they would immediately become invested with pure devotional service. And then they would see someone, they would say, chant the names of Krishna. They would embrace, and then they would become invested, and then they would go to another village. And this way, it was spreading all throughout South India. Kaviraj Goswami makes this point. So that would be very nice preaching strategy, isn't it? We become invested with Krishna Shakti, and we say, come here, come here. And we just embrace them, and we infuse them with Bhakti Shakti. You have to be empowered. In other words, to be a real Goswami Nandi, it requires empowerment by Lord Chaitanya. No one can just be a Goswami Nandi. Now I'm going to be a Goswami Nandi. How I'm doing that? Because I am distributing so many books. I am speaking so many things. You know, mouthing off from the Vyasa San like I tend to do. And thinking it's I'm a Goswami Nandi now because I'm very good at mouthing off. That is not Goswami Nandi. Goswami Nandi means first you have to be invested with power. Krishna Shakti, Bhakti Shakti. When one is invested with the Bhakti Shakti, the pleasure potency of the Lord, then at that time he'll be able to preach something. Preaching means ultimately people's hearts have to transform, otherwise no preaching at all. And we'll discover that to mouth out is very easy, but to transform even one person's heart, very difficult. My heart is not transforming because I don't associate properly, and I try to inspire others is a very difficult thing. The heart is very like iron. And it's hard to move the heart. So you have to have great power in order to transform even one person's heart. It creates great empowerment. So how? So then, continuing the South Indian travels, he meets one Kurma Brahmana. So this Kurma Brahmana is feeling very much despondent that he is in the Vishaya Taranga, the suffering, drowning in the waves of material sense enjoyment. Householder life, he was describing householder life like that. He was a Pakka Brahmana. He was doing everything very nicely. And he said, I'm suffering from Vishaya Taranga. Try to understand. He was doing everything very nicely, and he was still feeling that he was drowning in the waves of material sense gratification. So after meeting and serving Lord Chaitanya very nicely, when Lord Chaitanya was to leave, he wanted to go with Lord Chaitanya. And he was crying and crying that, I don't want to stay here. What is the use of my wife? What is the use of my kids? You know, they're all Maya only. I want to come and travel with you. So at this time, Mahaprabhu spoke this verse. Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh amaragai guruhan tare desh. He said, why are you speaking like this? This is not a good thing that you're speaking. If you want to please me, then you should instruct everyone in your village, in your country, Krishna upadesh. You should instruct them in Srimad Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavad Gita. In this way, on my order, amaragai guruhan, on my order you shall become a guru. Accept the position of guru and preach this message through your line. And this way, you will not be become infatuated by the Vishaya Taranga. You will not become, your household life will not obstruct your devotional service. And in that place, where you're fulfilling this order of mine, in that place, you will have my association. Punarapi etani pabi mora sangha. Mahaprabhu says this, if you fulfill my desire, then at that time, you will have my association, Mora Sangha. You will not be bereft of my association. He says this thing. So therefore, another example, Chaitanya Charitamrita, was Nityananda Prabhu. Mahaprabhu had told Nityananda Prabhu to go to Bengal to preach. Every year, the devotees from Bengal would come to Jagannath Puri to participate in the Ratha Yatra. So after Nityananda Prabhu went to Bengal to preach, he came back the next year with the devotees in order to enjoy the Ratha Yatra with Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, after the devotees arrived, he greeted everyone very nicely, and he said, Nityananda, can I speak to you? Come here, I want to speak to you. So he pulled Nityananda aside and said, why have you come here again? Huh? This is not very good. You should fulfill my desire because you are able to do something that even I am not able to do. Because I cannot leave Puri. I gave my promise to Mother Sachi not to leave Puri. I'm not able to leave Puri. So there's a very difficult work that needs to be done. What is the difficult work? Transforming the people's hearts in Bengal, especially Navadvip, because people in Navadvip, they used to always offend Lord Chaitanya. They can never appreciate his position. So this is very difficult work that I'm sending you to do, and as far as I can see, there's no one else who can do it. Therefore, do not come to Bengal every year. Rather, you should go to Bengal and fulfill my desire. He tells Nityananda Prabhu this. This is also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can do a difficult work that even I cannot do. Srila Prabhupada describes there that when one accepts the desire of the Supreme Lord, then he can do things that even the Supreme Lord cannot do. So Nityananda Prabhu did things that the Lord Chaitanya was not able to do. And Prabhupada says, and similarly, those who take up the service of the parampara, they can do things that even Nityananda Prabhu cannot do. Prabhupada says this. He can get such empowerment to do things that even Nityananda Prabhu himself cannot do. Like Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya's movement hardly spread beyond India before the appearance of Srila Prabhupada, or Guru. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started, and after Prabhupada did even more. So actually, this is what happens when one receives when one is devotionally inclined, service inclined, then they can get extreme empowerment beyond their limited capacity. We are very insignificant jivas. What can we do? Actually, we can do nothing. Sometimes we say this thing that, oh, this is a very difficult service to Krishna. But actually, all services to Krishna is difficult because it's Krishna. Try to understand. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever we're doing for Krishna is very difficult. Anyone may have this experience if they're serving their someone that they have a very strong reverence for, like Guru, usually. Then when you have to serve them prasadam, it's like a very scary thing, especially in the beginning. You feel very nervous. You're walking, you're bringing the plate like this. You know, you're scared to make any mistake also, you know. And then, you know, you put it down, the thing is falling all over the place, and you're feeling very nervous because you have high-level reverence. Something very simple, just, you know, you say, you know, the devotee says, take the plate and put it there. Really? You become nervous, you know. You become scared to come so close. It's actually intelligent also. There's a little intelligence involved in that. It's a very simple thing. Other he says, go and clean the floor after Maharaj has now finished eating. You go and clean the floor. And then you'll be walking over like very slowly with the rag in your hand. You know, you slowly bend down, slowly crawl over. And then, you know, Maharaj looks at you and you like jump, you know. You feel nervous. It means it's such a simple service. But when you have that type of reverence, even the simplest services become very difficult. Even simple, difficult, and it's not a bad difficulty. It's a devotional difficulty because of the type of regard that you're having. So similarly, when we say some service is hard, some service is easy, that's mental concoction. All the services are hard if we were holding that regard for the Supreme Lord. Because we think the Supreme Lord is just a stone, then we're not having that regard. So we just barging on the altar, walking around, throwing things around, tossing it, cleaning up and walking around. And then at the end, you know, try to pretend like it was very devotional activity going on. But if we were actually aware, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, God. We are not so advanced we could say, I'm just being spontaneous, you know, Lord, Hare Krishna, you know, and looking all, you know, no reverence, no, you know, your dhoti is looking all broke off and got holes in it and so on. We cannot say. First, in the beginning, we have to, because we're coming from the atheistic platform, we have to learn respect. So respect has its expression. A certain reverence is there. So then, if we will be holding that regard in the heart for the Supreme Lord, then you will discover that even the smallest services become quite challenging. Even the smallest thing becomes a little bit difficult in a devotional sense because you want to do it properly. Just like when we first learned pujari services, all devotees, when we were first learning, we were so scared, you know. We would be like ringing the bell, looking at the thing. We didn't want to miss a mantra. You know, if I miss a mantra, that's a maha aparad. You know, you would be very nervous. Then after we got aware of the service, we just ring. You know, before it used to take us 3-4 minutes to make the offering, it takes us like 30 seconds, you know. And then we go. Because the regard is dropped a little bit, familiarity breeds contempt. So there's no question of easy service, hard service. If we have proper regard, then all the services are challenging, and we should understand that our ability to do the service is coming from empowerment of Krishna. That's my point that I'm trying to make. That all the services are, when we have the proper regard, all the services will be challenging because of the proper attitude. They have, in the mundane sense, it's just like when a boy and a girl first get attracted to one another. I often make this point. There's a strong level of sensitivity there. So it makes every little thing very important, you know. Every little movement becomes significant because of the high level of sensitivity. I'm not thinking of anything. I often give this example, so I'm not trying to point anyone out. This is just the conditioned life. It's like this. So when boy meets girl, girl meets boy, high level of sensitivity, you should smell good. You should speak the right things. You shouldn't have things like, you know, on your teeth or anything. Everything has to be very pukka. And then after you hook up with the person and you realize they're a person, you know, the great difficulty, oh my God, this is actually a person, not an object, then the sensitivity tends to go down. And then you start doing things like passing air in front of them. It doesn't make any difference anymore. Before you would have never done something, so it was an abominable thing. Then after you're familiar with that, you just, you know, lift up. You don't even care anymore. No sensitivity. But when you were sensitive to the person's service, you were trying to be in a mood of service for your own sense gratification, but that was our understanding of service attitude. Then everything was very meaningful. Even how we wore our jacket, you know, the jacket shouldn't be too off center. It should be like right in line. Even the guy, he'll be in the mirror, you know, adjusting his jacket. Everything has to be pukka, high level of sensitivity. And then when he became used to the person, no level of sensitivity. And when he passes air, you know, he burps really like, yeah. He doesn't care anymore. What happened to the service attitude? It was not, anyway, not service attitude. Understand my point that I'm making? So when we're in a proper attitude of service towards Krishna, there is a high level of sensitivity. So all the services are challenging. And therefore, we should understand that whatever we're able to do is actually the empowerment of Krishna. It's actually the empowerment. So when we have this service attitude, when all we want to do is really serve, then anyway, whatever we're able to do is being empowered by Krishna and by Krishna's devotees, because the empowerment comes through the channel and invested into us. So there is no question of having limited capacity. just like the hand, when it's performing the function of a hand, it can do that more and more and more. If it tries to perform the function of a foot, it cannot perform the function of a foot. But a hand can perform the function of a hand, how you say, incessantly. So similarly, our eternal function is service to Krishna. So there is no limit to the service that we actually could do. If you really think, the same jiva that's moving our tiny little body is moving the body of a gigantic tamingala fish or whale. Tamingala fish is bigger than the whale. Tamingala fish can swallow a whale whole. So the same size jiva is moving a tamingala fish. The same size jiva that is moving this body, this very tiny, weak body, is moving the tamingala fish. You can get my analogy? In other words, what type of capacity does the jiva actually have? He has extraordinary capacity. But we tend to, due to our being fixed on the material platform and therefore always be tested, always absorbed in fear of not getting my sense enjoyment, our capacity is reduced. Even the capacity that we have according to material restriction, karma, becomes more reduced because of being absorbed in our own material platform. But when we are focused on actual service to Krishna, then we can gain capacity beyond our karmic situation also. Just like, how is it that Westerners, we are reciting Sanskrit shlokas, all these things? How is it possible? We're chanting Hare Krishna, and most importantly, we're following four regulative principles. How is it at all possible? You know, when Bhaktisiddhanta said, Ajamil, I should give this example. Ajamil was in Satyayuga, it was Satyayuga time. He sees a Shudra and a prostitute making out, and he tried to do his japa, but he's, I just can't take it anymore. He had to go find that prostitute. This was Satyayuga. They're very advanced in sense control, and he was a qualified Brahmana also. And he sees Shudra, prostitute, kissing, and then he couldn't handle it. He, you know, went and found that prostitute. And we're every day seeing that. As soon as you walk outside, immediately across the street, you know, I'm not going to do the image, but you can understand. As soon as you see, you go for book distribution, and you see all types of things going on now. People kissing their dogs also. It's very disgusting. Very disgusting. But people, very affectionately, they kiss their dogs also. So this is going on. This is going on in the material world. How is it that we're able to practice? Now, granted, our minds may be shifting off there every now and then after seeing those things, you know. Stop it, come back, come back, come back, come back. You know, and that's the practice. But at least we're continuing the practice of Krishna consciousness. How is it made possible? It is made possible by the Supreme Lord's empowerment. If it was according to karma, I've been born in Kali Yuga, I had very sinful birth, there is no question of controlling this nature. There's no question. On my own strength, there's no question of practicing Krishna consciousness. But by the empowerment of the Lord, then that becomes possible. So there's no question of having limited capacity, unlimited capacity for serving Krishna. But that empowerment comes through the channel of devotees. So when we gain attraction to fulfilling the desire of the Lord, that is where the empowerment comes from. That is how bhakti shakti is cultured. One comes closer to the internal energy of Krishna to the degree he's culturing the desire to satisfy Krishna. And Krishna's desire is communicated to us through parampara. So what Krishna wants for us is communicated through the spiritual master. And to the degree we culture the desire to fulfill that, to that degree we gain extraordinary power to serve Krishna. So it is mentioned here in this verse that these Goshi Anandis, these devotees, they travel all over the universe, of course, and specifically mentioned here, they go to the Tirthas. They're called as, and when they go to the holy places, they go to those holy places to purify those holy places. It is not like they're thinking, I've arrived here to purify the holy place. That is a natural situation when they arrive to the holy place. How are they able to purify the holy place? So Antasena Gadabrita, Prabhupada is quoting this verse. Because they're always carrying the Lord in their heart. They're always carrying the Lord in their heart. That's how they get so much power. But what is it that they're carrying in their heart? It's not just an image of the deity or an image of the Lord that they're carrying in their heart. And then they go and take bath and the waters are getting purified. What they're carrying in their heart, as I'm discussing based on the Shastras, is the desire to satisfy Krishna's desire. That's what they're carrying in their heart. So that desire of Krishna is Krishna. So they carry that desire in their heart and they gain extraordinary power. So going to the holy places is meant for associating with such personalities. One who goes to the holy places just to take bath, no better than a cow or ass. It is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that? Yatirtu buddhi salilena karichi janeshu abhigeshu sa eva gokaraha. That if one goes to the holy place to see the deity, to take bath like this, but he is not interested in hearing from the wise persons who live there, abhigeshu, the wise men, the devotees who live there, then he's like a cow and ass. Because the cow and ass also, they don't come to the temple to take darshan in America, but in India you may see sometimes. They take bath also. So they're taking bath, we are also taking bath. What is the difference? The cow also does not hear from the holy person. We also don't hear from the holy person. Then that means we are no better than cow or ass. What is the difference between an animal and a human being? There are many answers that can be given. Srila Prabhupada's, the difference between an animal and a human being, Srila Prabhupada says this in the first canto, is that a human being can hear properly, whereas an animal cannot. So hear from who? Hear from the holy persons. So what should be our favorite holy spot? A devotee asked me about 2 months ago. He said he was describing his favorite holy places to visit in Vrindavan. So I went to Keshi Ghat, I went to this place and that place. Those are my favorite spots. Then he said, what is your favorite spot? So I told him my favorite spot in Vrindavan is Ayendra Prabhu. So he got bewildered because he said, that's not a spot, that's a person. He said, well, that doesn't make any sense. I said, that's my favorite spot is Ayendra Prabhu. That's my favorite spot. So he said, that don't make any sense. So I read one song to him of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll read here now. Going to the holy... Oh, some of you are going to the holy place in next week, so this is fitting discussion in this regard. What should be our attitude when we're visiting the holy places? And Rakta Prabhu was asking for blessings this morning. We hear the blessings are given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. What does it mean to go to a holy place? What does it really mean? Devotee swa antasnena gadabrita. He is carrying the Lord in his heart, therefore he is also called as Tirtha. Tirtha means holy place, so devotee is also called Tirtha because he's carrying the Supreme Lord in his heart. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda, I now read the Bengali, it's very nice, we can maybe sing it one day. So he says here, I'm just going to read the prayer. Try to understand this. This is very beautiful. He says, my dear mind, you are addicted to traveling to the holy places. You want to visit Ayodhya, Mathura, Haridwar, Kashi, Kanchipuram, Ujjain, Dwarka, and other such places again and again in the hopes of attaining liberation. Such travels to holy places are simply another form of illusion, and as such, they are useless labor only. The fact is, visiting holy places does not make a person's mind steady. It quotes here. Does not make a person's mind steady. Chitta sthira tirte na hikare. His heart does not become steady just by visiting the holy places. Anyway, we all have practical experience with this. He continues, the actual benefit of visiting holy places is association with the exalted devotees who reside there. He wrote through Sadhu Sange Antaranga. Antaranga, we heard this, Antaranga means, this translated intimate association, internal. Antaranga means internal, as opposed to Bahiranga. Hare Krishna Prabhu, how are you doing? And as they're explaining, you're walking off. You know, like in the material world, we would do like that. How are you? And as you were giving the answer to the person, how are you? Walk down the street. So I used to say, for fun, I used to tell them I'm suffering, just to change up the program. The and I said, how are you? I'm suffering. Can you help me? And when I said that, the person told me, he told me that was offensive. One student told me, he said, that's offensive. You should not say like that. I said, what am I supposed to say? You're supposed to say, I'm fine. And then you ask, how am I? And I say, I'm fine. And then we go about our business. It's called Bahiranga Sangha. Bahiranga Sangha, very external affair, is a very external affair. So he said, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling us, Sadhu Sangha Antaranga, Tirtha Pala Sadhu Sangha. The actual fruit of going to the Tirtha is Sadhu Sangha. What type of Sadhu Sangha? Sadhu Sangha Antaranga, where it's done intimately. The most congenial form of intimacy is service. That type of Sangha you do. Sri Krishna Bhajana Manohara, then you render devotion to Krishna under their guidance. This is the actual fruit of visiting the holy places. Wherever the devotees reside is a holy place. Therefore, you should fix up your mind by constantly associating with devotees. I do not want to visit any holy places where Vaishnavas do not reside. What is the benefit of walking to distant places? Where the Vaishnavas reside, that place is Vrindavan. And so one can experience unlimited happiness there. Wherever devotees reside, that place is Vrindavan. So he'll clarify this point in the next stanza. Listen to the clarification. The place where devotional service to Krishna is practiced, mukti or liberation resides as a maidservant, and the water found there is none different from Ganges water. The mountains are none different from Govardhan Hill. The land is none different from Sri Vrindavan, and the pleasure potency of the Lord is personally manifest. He clarifies, wherever the place where devotees are rendering devotional service in the true sense, then the water there is Ganga water. So Lake Michigan? Or Ganga? Rocky Mountains or Govardhan Hill? Appalachian Mountains or Govardhan Hill? It is saying here. That's a very profound realization. We see Lake Michigan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if there's a devotee, even one devotee, rendering genuine devotional service, then that water is actually Ganga water. Oh, we can go and take bath. Don't do that. I'm just making a point based on here. Then he concludes. This is a very nice conclusion. Vinoda kaiche bhai brahmiya ki palapai Vaishnava sevana mora vrata. So he says, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, oh my brothers, what is the actual fruit of traveling to all these holy places? What is the actual fruit? In other words, what is the use in all this travel? Vaishnava sevana mora vrata. Make your vrata, he's praying to his mind, you make your fixed vow, Vaishnava seva. Make that your fixed vow. This is the actual fruit. If one shall become fixed in his vrata for rendering Vaishnava seva, then he's actually gaining the fruit of traveling in the holy place. And if one loses his determination in Vaishnava seva, then what does one gain from traveling to the holy places? This is always the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Shastras. I was going to read something else. I did not read it. Mahaprabhu, when he traveled to Gaya, he met Ishvara Puri there. So he told the same thing. I just read this. My journey to Gaya has become successful the moment I was able to see your lotus feet. This is Mahaprabhu speaking to Ishvara Puri. If one offers oblations to the forefathers in a holy place, then the forefathers are delivered. But one delivers only he to whom the oblation was offered. By seeing you, however, millions of forefathers are immediately freed from material bondage. So everyone is coming, is it? For the Shraddha is there? So many people were coming, bringing things. Was it? It happens twice a year, right? So they were coming. But if they should just see a devotee, then they could deliver millions of forefathers. Hard to have this faith, huh? Therefore, holy places are not equal to you, for you purify even the holy places. Please deliver me from the ocean of material existence. I surrender myself unto you. I beg that you make me drink the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet. So, same point as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was explaining. So, when we shall be fixed in our attitude of service, at that time, you are actually in a holy dham. But if we are not fixed in such an attitude, then even if you reside in a holy dham like a temple, you reside in hell. Because the attitude will not allow you to understand what is the actual position. So this is my discussion. I have more things I wanted to say, but... Yeah.
Because we say that, you know, by visiting these holy dhams, you do, you know, without your knowledge, you derive some benefit. Or, you know, taking prasadam or any kind of spiritualized activity that we perform, there's benefit regardless of whether you're aware of it or not, right?
Sure.
Right. Otherwise, you wouldn't bother, you know, distributing prasadam and things like that. Or, you know, taking people. Well, I know that doesn't seem related, but my point is, if there's some benefit derived, even if you're totally ignorant of what you're doing, then how can it be that, you know, because it seems like statements like that, like that it has no real substance.
Well, we should try to understand the condition situation. I've mentioned this point many times in my discussions. Apakrita vastu nahe prakritir gochar. I mean, this verse I quoted many times. That spiritual substance, apakrita vastu means spiritual substance, is always beyond the jurisdiction of material conceptions. Prakritir gochar. So we recite the honeybee story, licking the outside of the bottle but not actually tasting the honey. So when we go to the holy dhams, what do we actually experience? So we may derive, of course we get a gata sukriti from doing that, but we don't exactly come in contact with spiritual substance. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, my heart does not become fixed. My heart does not become fixed. Why? Because even though I had that opportunity, I was still associating with material conception. And therefore, I was not able to get the real fruit of that association, the real fruit benefit, which is also true of devotees as well. So in order, so the situation of a bound soul is that we are very much misled by our bodily concept of life. So it makes it very difficult for us to appreciate the actual spiritual substance of things. Just like I mentioned in my discussion last week about what is it about Srila Prabhupada's pure devotion that we appreciate? You know, and generally the tendency is to give the list of fruits. So many temples, so many deities, so many books, and so on. But that's not the that's not exactly the substance. It's an expression of the substance, but it's not the substance. If Prabhupada were not to have all those things, would he still be possessed of pure devotion? So the point is that our material conceptions don't allow us to gain the real benefit of the so many opportunities we may get unknowingly by associating with the tirthas and the books and so on. So the only hope to actually come from the platform, the material plane of being misled by our conceptions to the spiritual plane, is the sound vibration, transcendental sound. Krishna, Mahaprabhu tells this thing in CC, that Krishna protected the whole world. How did he protect the whole world? By aiming his instructions at Arjuna. So Krishna's protection lied in his instructions, the Bhagavad Gita, and other allied shastras also. So the protection of the jiva lies in transcendental sound vibration. Because what is the real threat to the jiva in this material world? The real threat is not an earthquake or something like that, where his body will be perished. The body will anyway perish. The real threat to the jiva is his ignorance of the actual truth. That is the actual threat of the jiva. So Krishna protects the fallen conditioned souls by aiming his instructions at Arjuna. That the protection of the jiva lies in spiritual sound vibration. So because the devotee is the embodiment of that transcendental sound and he communicates that to us, that is the actual hope for contacting the spiritual substance. That sound vibration works as a bridge for helping us cross from the material platform to the spiritual platform. So the point is not to go to the tirthas. That wasn't the point. That's not the mood. That don't bother going to the tirtha. The mood is that if you shall go without the association of transcendental sound vibration in the form of your guru's guidance, in the form of the guidance of the sadhu, then what benefit you will derive because you're in the material platform? You will see, like now, how many of us will feel confident to take college students to Vrindavan, you know, as a holy trip? You know, they come to Vrindavan, the open sewage, you know, because their whole idea of holy place is going to be like Tibet, so many green trees and, you know, chuckles and all these types of special birds singing very nicely and so on. And we say holy place means like that, where you can sit down and, you know, no disturbance. And we take them to Vrindavan, you know, Vrindavan situation right now. Vrindavan's completely spiritual. But if we shall bring them to Vrindavan now, they will grant the right benefit, but because of the material conceptions, they will be blocked from the true substance of the thing. So that is the mood. The mood is that our real benefit lies in the association of transcendental sound, which is communicated by the pure devotee to us. And if we shall go to these places or we shall render service without the assistance of that vibration which is guiding us, then, you know, you can go on many, many, many lifetimes accumulating agyata sukriti and not get the real fruit of the thing. Kaviraj Goswami himself says in chapter 8, that you can go on chanting Hare Krishna for millions of lifetimes and not gain the fruit of prema due to your offenses. And why do we make offenses? Because of material conceptions. So it is the material conceptions that need to be removed. Therefore, we should not understand that there is no benefit to the deity. There is no benefit to the temple. There is no benefit to prasadam. But the point is to really derive benefit from those things. that association, that sacred association, we need help. This is always a, this is a general attitude, especially if a conditioned soul. I need help. Right? Mahaprabhu is praying. So this is the beginning of the cultivation of our bhajan. We should, I need help. And who is there to help us? The saintly persons. That is the beginning of bhajan kriya. So we, sadhu sangha de bhajan kriya. So this is the mood. The mood is that to get fixed in the attitude of service towards devotees. That's that. That's the general mood. And we may want to cross over that point, but we can't. It's the most important thing. And it's a very difficult thing also. Have you noticed? Have you not noticed? It's a very difficult thing. So we must get to that point. Then everything progresses smoothly from there. Okay, you can say what you want, and then I'll be like, aren't you across over any time? Sorry.
Hey, Krishna. You made it sound kind of cut and dry. Like, you're like, well, you know, either you're fearful or you're blissful. Like, sometimes you could be fearful and sometimes you could be blissful. I mean, there can there be like a middle ground with these types of things?
Generally not. The fear platform may have its variegated manifestations, you know, in the form of hankering, lamentation. But these are all, the foundational platform of conditioned life is fear. That's the platform on which he's moving about. And then when that fear shall be dissipated, at that time he enjoys happiness. And that happiness is also variegated. It has different levels of intensity. But it's, in other words, it's like two platforms. And it has its different degrees of intensity. But the Shastras are mentioning this point, that this is the platform that the jiva is working on in the material world. Just like you might be enjoying eating, sleeping, and mating. But if your life shall be in danger, then you immediately abandon that eating, sleeping, mating also, isn't it? So the fear is a basic platform for which we're working. A person works hard because he wants to he's afraid of not being appreciated. You know, so it has its very variegated manifestations, but it's fear, foundationally. And then after that fear is dissipated, then it's happiness. And that has its different degrees of intensity also. So we may call it something different at different levels of intensity, but it's basically one platform like that. Okay, then, so I hope you could derive the essence of what I was trying to say. I didn't do a very good job, but it was a very important point. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.